Sunday.
It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over, and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And you gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Another edition of your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about.
Wow.
Big day for the Utes, big day for the Cougars. We'll get to the Aggies and their rough performance a little bit later on. But Hans, let's start with the Utes. Look, you're bright. You've been ripping out tweets already this morning on the film review. Lloyd, you did the pre and post yesterday. That was a signature win. Kyle Whittingham said that's a top five win for him ever. Ever. And Kyle's got a few of them. And boy, what a game last night. Let's start with, I thought it was over. 28-14. Utes are going to win this thing by double digits. This thing's no big deal. It's over with. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, Caleb Williams does his thing. Bryson Barnes throws the pick six. And yet, here we go. Bryson Barnes takes him right down the field, kicks the field goal, and it's a signature moment for the University of Utah last night.
I can't believe that Bryson Barnes scramble. You know, when the clock is ticking down and just his overall awareness to understand how much time he's got, how far he can run without stepping out of bounds, and he gets down the edge, and I literally, like Scotty just talked about, I literally just finished that final drive, and I watched his receivers turn. As soon as he took off, his receivers turned, and they picked up blocks, and that 25-yard scramble is what set them up on that field goal. Outside of that, Lloyd, there were two offside penalties in that final drive. You know, you had a fourth down attempt with Jaquindon. Like, there were some real sketchy moments in that final drive to get you in field goal position.
There was a targeting. There was all sorts of things that happened to get into that position. And I'm telling you what, I think, and you heard Jaquindon Jackson say it in the post game. This guy, Bryson Barnes, is our guy. He's the leader. They will follow him into battle any week. And the guy was absolute just stones. Like, if I was to tell you four touchdowns was a quarterback had four touchdowns, you probably think Caleb Williams. No, Bryson Barnes. He was 14 of 23, 235 yards, three touchdowns through the air, and one on the ground. He had 57 yards rushing. The guy had four touchdowns. There's your stat, Hans. You always have the one of those little weird stats. Four touchdowns by Bryson Barnes, and what a performance by him.
Oh my gosh, that final scramble. I can't even believe it, man.
So I was, we were getting on the plane to come back from San Jose, and I had it on my phone watching the game, and there were a few people around me that were also watching the game, and they were actually, so we're all streaming it. And so you're watching it at different times, and I'm hearing somebody yell out, "Get out of bounds, get out of bounds, what are you doing?" And so I'm like, well, something's going on here. And so I'm about 20 seconds behind, and I'm watching it as well. And then I see the same play, and I'm thinking, okay, well, he's going to get out of bounds. And he keeps going, and then he keeps going, and he keeps going. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's still got open field ahead of him. And fortunately, Kyle holds on to those two timeouts at least, and he gets all the way down to the 20 to have the stones to just keep going, just keep pushing, knowing you've got the timeout, and get it all the way down there. I mean, it's just, that's a heady play. It was really impressive. And a kid that, I mean, I've been hard on him. A lot of people have been hard on him, and you kind of felt like he gave it away with the pick six there for a moment. But I mean, props to the pig farmer. They gave him a scholarship. He's earned every dollar of it, Hans.
Every single penny. And Lloyd, I don't know about you, but how confident were you when Cole Beckers stepped up for this field goal? What was it, a 38 yarder?
Yep.
I'm not confident at all. He had missed some already this season. This short had been just a chip shot, but he's missed some probably. I think he missed one right around this.
I have it right here. He's 4 of 5 for field goals between 30 to 39 yards. He's 4 of 5 this year, including this one that he just knocked through. He's 1 of 2 from 50 plus. So he's. And he doesn't have a lot of field goal attempts. He's only got 9 field goal attempts on the year, and he's 7 of 9. He's
been dealing with that injury, so I'm thinking, you know, and he didn't look like he was 100%. He looked like he was limping out there a little bit too. So I'm thinking, I don't know what's gonna. And by the way, how about the decision to? I mean, we've seen some fumbles, some snap problems with Bryson Barnes, and the decision to, with six seconds left, to decide to get it, the ball in right in the middle, I thought was very brave. I don't know if I would have done that, but Kyle Whittingham, that's why he makes the big bucks.
I can't even believe what I just watched. And I've been up since about 3:30. I started the game at about 4:30. And I can't believe what I just saw in that final drive. Like, just for that fourth down,
yeah.
To your point, Lloyd, where you have the guts to go a direct snap to Jaquindon Jackson. Now, I know he's a former quarterback, and I know that he can field that snap just fine. And I know he's big, and he comes downhill, but you got motion that's coming across the formation, and the snap comes just after the motion, like right off the back end of, I think it was Mikey Matthews that was in motion. Jaquindon takes that thing and dives, and literally they have to go back and review to see that he got the distance. It was that close.
Yep.
I can't believe the stones that these coaches showed and the execution in those critical moments.
Well, I think you also have to give a lot of credit to a fact that you've got an offensive coordinator that's dealing with a second and third string quarterback, maybe even a third and, you know, third and fourth string quarterback. If you look at the lineup coming out of camp. Yeah. You're out at your star tight end. You're out another tight end. You've been dealing with offensive line issues and shuffling guys around like that. Like, Andy Ludwig's put on a masterclass, and he and Kyle Whittingham coach circles around Lincoln Riley. You know, the whiz kid of college football, and just made him look silly last night.
Oh, yeah. And Lloyd, I want you to talk about that roughing the passer. Bear Alexander comes through and throws his helmet down. Did you think that he should be ejected? I mean, kind of, what did you see in that play?
By the very definition, I mean, he went helmet to helmet on him. So by the very definition, if you go helmet to helmet like that, I mean, they got to figure something out with this. I think it's... I don't think Cole Bishop was a targeting. And I mean, by the definition, he ended up going, not by on purpose, but he went helmet to helmet with him. And after they reviewed it, they said, okay, that targeting, he's out, he's done. They booted him. And he had a rough game, by the way, because he had a personal foul earlier in the game where he threw Jaquindon Jackson, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Which I believe ended up leading to a touchdown because that was down towards the goal line.
Yes, it did. And it would have been third and like three or third and four or third and goal.
Right.
At the four. But yes. He threw him. Yeah, gave him a first.
Screw him, give him a first, and they go and score. So he had himself a rough game. And I don't Yeah, that's gonna one. That one's gonna haunt him a little bit. But I'm telling you what, the fact that Bryson Barnes threw that pick six, and then he went the very next drive and threw a dime to Sione Vaki, I thought showed so much heart. And I mean, you do that, you have to be thinking to yourself, I just lost ourselves the game. I just lost the game. And he goes out and just throws a dime on another wheel route, which, by the way, has become their favorite play. Tell me if you've seen Sione Vaki throw a wheel route yet. Yeah.
Oh, that Sione wheel is sick, man. Just coming off the wing.
They can't keep up with him. It's unguardable.
Yeah, and he just streaks down the side, and you can't hook up a linebacker with him. You got to exchange a safety to him. And if you exchange a safety, now you're going to open up that post, that deep post. You know, if you're running that wheel and you're throwing a deep post and you're forcing a safety to make a decision, you're screwed, because Bryson Barnes throws that pass well. You know, and I do want to highlight the Bryson Barnes pass to Landon King to start the second half. Bryson was under pressure and was scrambling backwards, kind of tumbling backwards, and releases that ball off the back heel as Landon King is breaking at the goal line and puts it right on the money. There was not a lot of wiggle room for that pass. If that's behind him, that's intercepted. And he pushes that thing right into Landon King. And how about Landon King coming up big time as the tight end situation's all up in the air? He's come up big time and pulled down that touchdown pass. Bryson Barnes deserves so much love and credit. You knew that there were going to be problems. Lloyd, you highlighted the fumble at the mesh point where he had to kind of fall back on it. You guys have talked about the pick six. You know, there were definite moments where you're like, oh, no. But what he did in crunch moments to, you know, really push Utah to the win in this game. Yeah, I think he's a legendary Utah name. I know that that's a little bit quick because Utah's got a lot of games to play, but this was a big win, Scotty.
Yeah, no, I think I don't. You know, I don't know how this season's going to end this year for the University of Utah, but considering the adversity that they've had, and by the way, after the game announcing that, yep, you know what, Cam Rising's out for the year, Keithy's out for the year, and I think that actually is a good thing. I mean, when I say a good thing, I mean, I think it's good to just settle the team and say, look, we're just going to put everything behind us at this point and just say, we're done. Like, this is the way we're going. This is Bryson Barnes' team right now. And Lloyd, you mentioned the comments in the post game and said, okay, look, you know what? Bryson Barnes is the guy. We're going to sink or swim with this guy. And we're not going to have this Cam Rising, is he or isn't he, intrigue going on anymore. And hopefully Cam gets completely healthy, and then Cam can, you know, either go to the NFL or use his medical red shirt and have all of next season to put something together in the Big 12. And I hope it all works out for him. But as of right now, this is Bryson Barnes' team. He's put his fingerprints all over this thing, and they will sink or swim with him. And if he continues to play like he did last night, there's going to be a lot of swimming for this team.
And it's his team. And if by chance he comes out and struggles, that just means they're going to get Sione Vaki more involved. They'll put a wrinkle that'll maybe take the ball out of his hands a little bit. They'll find something to do. But he is the starting quarterback. He's the guy. He's the leader of this offense now. And you talked about those guys, you know, announcing that they're going to be done for the season. Cam Rising and Brant Keithy. Well, another one that's done for the season, and this one hurts.
Oh yeah,
Lander Barton. Lander Barton, he was in the second half, was seen in a walking boot, and he is officially, it's looking like he's done for the season. So that is, I mean, that's an all Pac-12 player right there, defensive player. I mean, he was what, all freshman last year. He is, not having Lander Barton out there, is a real, but you know what, this Utah team is, we've talked about the depth of this defense, and they'll find somebody else, I have no doubt.
Yeah, but that one,
it hurts. I don't even know how you replace him.
I don't either, but, you know, you mentioned some guys are coming back. Like, watching Connor O'Toole back on the field was so much fun. Oh, man. He had so many big plays, whether it was pursuit plays, chasing things down from the backside, his big sack coming out of the half, or was it just before the half? Might have just been closing. I think it was to close the first half. He had a beautiful sack. Was he the one that forced the fumble? Let's see. No, or was that Van? That was Van Fillinger.
That was Van. Van had himself a game.
Yeah, Van forced that fumble out on the pursuit tackle on Marshawn Lloyd, and Cole Bishop picked that thing up. So, you know, getting those guys back and getting them healthy, but, man, come on. Why do the hits got to keep coming for Kyle? If this team was healthy, guys, we're talking about a Final Four team.
Oh, yeah.
It was Cam and Brant.
Absolutely.
It's a Final Four team.
You can't argue that. Like this team has, I mean, they're able to do, they have to go find Sione Vaki to come out and by the way, Sione Vaki had 200 yards of offense, over 200 yards. I mean, that this leading tackler of theirs that's unbelievable on the defense, that's their offensive weapon. And you know, I'm telling you, this team, if they didn't have all these injuries, I mean, the fact that they are 6-1 is, I don't even know how it's possible. Yeah. I don't know how they're 6-1, but yet they are. Here we are.
Kyle Whittingham said before the season, it's his best team he's ever had, most talented team he's ever had, and it's you can't argue that right now. I mean, if you have a healthy Keithy, if you have a healthy Cam Rising, if you got a healthy defense from start to finish, and yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this team is a college football playoff caliber team, roster-wise, depth-wise. And unfortunately, it's a bummer to see it. But who knows? Maybe they run the table and they do challenge that. You know, you win, you beat Oregon, you beat Washington, you're going to have that chance. That's a tough, tough ask against those two teams. Yeah. But, hey, we talked about the big three. You're 1-for-1 right now. Now you got the other two coming up.
Kyle Whittingham, by the way, was on his post game.
Oh, yeah.
He was on fire. He says the line of the day is they have a Heisman Trophy winner. We have a pig farmer. Mic drop. See ya.
That was so good.
Like, I'm telling you, this and I don't know if you USC, none of their players came out and talked.
Yeah.
Like, they are like, come out and talk, you cowards. Like, come on. You put up all this noise and you're gonna no show and not come out and answer the hard questions. Like, I mean, I'm surprised Lincoln Riley talked to anybody, because I mean, that is such a soft team.
Caleb Williams sits on the bench and pouts, doesn't go out and no handshakes, nothing. That nobody's made available the players. And that's not just that the players, you know, obviously don't want to. No player actually ever wants to, after a loss, go talk to the media. But that's why you got a head coach in your media relations to say, hey, no, put your big boy pants on and go face the music. Let's do this. And
cool off for a sec.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool off. But, you know, do your job and go out and meet with the media. This is a grown up job you're doing. You're getting paid millions of dollars, some of you. So get your ass out there and go do your thing. And but no. They're not made available. Only Lincoln Riley. Look, they're treated like babies. You know, they act like babies out on the field. They're coddled by their coaching staff. They're coddled by the university. And when you treat players like that and you don't force them to do hard things, you're going to play arrogantly, which I think they do. And you're going to look like that. And that is a direct reflection on Lincoln Riley. It's a direct reflection on USC that they coddle their players and they're not tough. Lloyd, I can't remember who was it came on. Was it with Unrivaled who said that they're soft? It's a guy that covers USC. He goes, USC is soft because their coach allows them to be soft. Kyle Whittingham, in no way, shape, or form, after a tough loss, would ever allow any group of players to not meet with the media. I know he keeps people out of practice and he keeps things secretive and doesn't, you know, let people know exactly what's going on. And I know that drives some people nuts. But at the end of the day, when it's time to have some accountability and speak for your actions, even when things don't go your way, after Oregon State or after tough losses last year, you go and you talk to the media and you own it. And Lincoln Riley treats his players like babies and they play like it.
Oh man, it actually reflects in that kind of crunch minute where Utah gets that ball back and you get that 15 yarder and you give up the rushing lane where Barnes takes off. And I know Utah had some mistakes in there too with some offside penalties false start penalties, but you know, there were so many moments where they didn't answer the call. Caleb Williams doesn't throw a single touchdown pass. And I know he'd hit that nice deep ball for 50 some odd yards that set up one of their two touchdowns in the first half of that game. But it's like it really did present itself when the game was on the line. Because let's not forget, man, that was in the Coliseum. And you saw it, like the crowd showed up for this one. Like they were starting to believe and they showed up. And that was a difficult environment. But yeah, you're right, Scotty. I think some of that toughness showed there in the final parts. And on the other end, it showed for Kyle Whittingham's team. They really do reflect who he is.
Yeah. All right, let's shift gears. Utah with a huge win. Now BYU, probably one of their most complete games yesterday. Still not perfect, and I've not had a chance to go back and watch the film on this one yet. I got in about 3 a.m. last night from San Jose. But Hans, you had the call on this one. Let's talk about it. BYU gets the running game, you know, 150, 149 yards. We'll take it. I mean, it's been a while since they've got the running game going, and finally it looked like it started to click a little bit last night.
I was a pig in mud, Scotty. I was. Lloyd, I'm telling you, like the first couple drives, and I'm watching the trenches on both sides do their work, and they both had tough tasks, really. The trench, I thought Texas Tech had some really good players up front. Jalen Hutchings, they call him Jay Boogie. He is a fantastic defensive tackle. He's an NFL D tackle, and he was playing nose, and then he would switch over to a 2-3 technique, and he was head up on Connor Pay, and Connor Pay worked him. And Waylon Apuaho had a really good game, Scotty. And Paul Maile rebounded from that TCU game because, you know, you guys heard me get after Paul Maile after that TCU game. He struggled. He missed some tackles. But against Texas Tech, they sealed him up, and they won on the offensive trench. Then on the other side, Nice Amahe, guy that we just haven't talked a lot about this year, he owned that Texas Tech offensive front. He was just right there in the middle and just working them all night. So was Jackson Cravens. I just thought Nice Amahe did a little bit more plugging. And then I gave the game ball, even though Eddie Heckard recovered a fumble in the end zone for a touchdown, and then Eddie Heckard got a Crew Wakely tip. Crew Wakely, sixth string safety to start the season and is now starting for this BYU defense, shifted over on a beautiful defensive read all the way across the field to get into a passing lane and batted the ball. I talked to him in the postgame, by the way, and he said, yeah, we just knew this quarterback was young. He really does show with his eyes. I saw his eyes move. I went and read to the lane, and he batted this thing up, and Heckard came down with it. They did great. I gave the ball to Tyler Batty, the game ball and the game MVP. Tyler Batty was ornery. He played angry. And guys, I think it was about the midway point in this game, there was an extra point attempt, and Tyler was pushing to try to get in there and block it. But one of the Texas Tech linemen actually grabs him, kind of shoves his shoulder. He turns. Actually, he's the tight end. He's the Texas Tech tight end, and he spits in Batty's face and just goes all across the forehead. And you see Batty like shake his head like, what? And you could see it, and the ref saw it, and Batty pulled the ref, and the ref immediately ejects this guy, gets him out of there. And from that point on, Batty was just breaking people in half. He was out there on punt covers, two punt covers, one punt cover. He came down and blew this guy up onto his own sideline. The second punt cover, he came down. He hit this dude so hard, the guy didn't have any choice but to let go of the ball, caused a fumble. Ryan Rico, the punter, picks it up. And Batty ends up just destroying the game from a special teams aspect, from a defensive line aspect. He controlled the edge, and I just thought he was special. And then, hey, how about this, guys? This is disgusting, and I would love this podcast and this moment to go viral. I actually talked to an assistant that told me the details on what happened in the handshake line. So Tyler Batty was going through the handshake line, and I guess one of the Texas Tech linemen had been badgering Batty on social media and doing just a lot of shady things on social media. And Tyler was just going to go up and kind of squash things and was like, hey, because Tyler won. And it's like, hey, you know, it's my field. We just beat you, and we beat you soundly. Go on. He didn't want to make a mess. So he's like, hey, man, good game. the guy at first, I guess, was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Whatever. And then he's like, no, whatever. And he turned and starts MFing Tyler Batty and then spits in his face. Tyler Batty got spit in his face twice by these Texas Tech morons.
Don't do that.
Yeah, it's like, what? Wait a second. Isn't there an unspoken rule here, guys? You don't spit in people's face.
Going on in Lubbock. Yeah, Jeez, man.
Who's running that team?
I know who
wouldn't stand for that.
Wells wouldn't put up with that nonsense.
Nope, not one bit.
What? Tell me that one. I can't remember.
No, I'm just saying Matt Wells coaching that team. That's not happening.
Oh, yeah. Heck no. No, guys, they spit in his face twice. And I feel sick for him because it's like, you know, you can fight out on the field. Look, grab my face mask. Throw me around a little bit if you want. Throw a punch. I don't care. Don't spit in my face, you despicable puke. How vile and foul can you be?
Huh? Did he keep his cool on that or did he lose it?
No, he kept his cool. And then he was just breaking people in half between the whistles.
Well,
he did the best thing you can do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's hard to do because, I mean, you get provoked like that. And then you start swinging punches and then you're both out of the game. And to be able to keep your cool and say, no, you know what? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to prove it out on the field and go out and get it done and completely change the aspect of the game in a bunch of different ways. Like he did last night. Props to him and props to him holding his composure in the post game too, because you know, you're shaking hands. You got a lot of people around you, and then you start swinging, and then you got everybody involved at that point. I mean, that could have been a complete chaos had things really escalated in the postgame. But geez, hands.
It pisses me off.
I mean, you played in the late 90s in college football, and it was, you know, there weren't a lot of camera angles. It could have been the old Wild West, and even that didn't happen back then, right?
No, it didn't. I got spit in my face one time in my 20 years of football, and it was in one of those Senior Bowl games, and it was an Ohio State player, and he had thrown some racial comments at me. He called me a cracker, and it was just battle back and forth. And that's the one I've told the story where I said, why are you saying mean things like that? I haven't called you any names. You know, I just was doing this dumb act. And the dude spit right in my face. And I can't, I remember I took my hand up under my face mask and I just wiped it off of my face. Ooh. And I just looked at my hand and I looked at him and I said, oh, thanks. You know, because what are you going to do? So you're going to start a big fight, a brawl in a Senior Bowl? Because a lot of times, and back in the 90s, a lot of times nobody would see it. Cameras wouldn't see it. Officials wouldn't see it. Other teammates, players wouldn't see it. So it was your word against his. And you start this big brawl and you're fighting in a Senior Bowl. And NFL scouts are like, well, what's his problem? Has he got a temper issue? It is such a catch when somebody spits in your face, because the only fair thing to do when somebody spits in your face is beat them unconscious. And I'm not kidding about that. Like, that is assault. You spit in somebody's face, that's assault. You deserve to have your ass beat so bad that you don't wake up the next morning. You don't spit in people's face. Yeah. That's ridiculous to me, man. And it happened twice by Texas Tech players. Something better be done. And I'm hoping that BYU sends out some type of notification to Texas Tech, like, hey, if you're going to bring those dudes around that are spitting, we're not playing that game. You're not spitting in players' face next time you play this team.
You know, if it was the other way around, they would be blasting BYU about this.
Yeah.
No matter what it was.
Oh, Lloyd, come on.
They would be blasting BYU for this.
From every angle. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it hit national headlines.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the NCAA came down and suspended whoever spit for 6 months. Because they continue to suspend BYU players for absolutely nothing, I guess more on the basketball side of things. But, you're right. This would be a big-time national headline if this happened from a BYU player.
Yep.
And I hate that this is becoming a storyline, but the point I wanted to make on this, and Scotty, I thought you highlighted it well, instead of reacting like I just said, that's what you deserve when you spit in somebody's face. He did it like you actually should do it, like a man would do it. Take care of business in between the whistles. And that's why I gave him the game ball. I thought it was fantastic the way he finished out that game.
Mm. Well, don't look now, but the BYU is 5-2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, 5-2.
I mean, look at their schedule coming up. And I mean, we spent so much time this week saying, all right, you know what? If you don't get this win, bowl eligibility is on the brink because of the rest of their schedule. Well, now you got one win to pick up to be bowl eligible. That certainly seems to be well within the realm of possibility. And you got great moments from Oklahoma and Texas this year. And then you had a couple moments yesterday where Oklahoma and Texas were, man, they were on the ropes to Houston and was it Central Florida, I want to say. And
yep.
And now, granted, they still got it done, but I mean, they didn't look like world beaters at all yesterday. And so that's the thing that's so great about college football. On any given Saturday, somebody's dialed in and somebody's not, and you can take advantage of guys that aren't playing particularly well. Now, BYU's got a big one against Texas, and we'll spend all week talking about it, but you know what? BYU can hold their head up high. You played a hell of a game against a pretty good opponent, a preseason top 25 team. You found a way to get it done, and you fixed a lot of issues. We'll spend all week talking about the running game. Has it turned the corner? Keaton Slovis, not a ton of yards, but did throw two touchdowns. And so there's a lot to really take away and still say, yeah, you know what? We beat Texas Tech. We beat them soundly. And yet there's still a lot of things you can improve on to be an even better team to win maybe 7-8 games this year. So props to BYU. Big, big win yesterday. And we'll spend a whole lot of time this week with the show beginning tomorrow at noon, getting this thing ready. All right. It was. Go ahead.
Really quick, just to wrap that up, Scotty, I just wanted to mention that it's not that I stood in defense of Aaron Roderick. It's just that I continue to remind people that he's had great offenses and he's put two quarterbacks in the NFL. And at some point, it should present itself. Keaton Slovis looked much more settled in the pocket. We talked about how important it was for him to play a big game, and especially in the first half. Second half, his feet got a little happy and moved outside the pocket, but you remember me talking about that pocket this last week. He stayed in the pocket. He delivered a lot of good balls, and it looked good. The other thing is Aiden Robbins being back for BYU and being healthy made a huge difference. I know he didn't exactly rack it up per carry, but he had some really big bone-crushing runs that showed that maybe BYU can be more consistent with this team. And then I'll also tell you, Quinn Ewers, the Texas quarterback, left that game in the fourth quarter in a sling. And word out of Texas is it's not looking good for Quinn Ewers.
Is the Manning kid going to make a debut against BYU? Is the Manning
They didn't put him in.
Oh,
against Houston.
Really? I haven't had a chance to see the game. So he's not even second string, huh?
No, they put in this Malik Murphy.
Oh, geez.
And Malik Murphy came in and went 1-2 and finished the game out. He's kind of a dual threat freshman quarterback out of Inglewood, California.
Was that late in the game that he went?
Yeah. On? Yeah. It's late. It was in the fourth quarter. This kid, I was just watching it. He's huge. 6'5", 6'6", 240 pounds. And he moves well. So if you're taking on Malik Murphy, it's going to be another interesting test for BYU. Hmm.
All right. Finally, Utah State and San Jose State. Aggies had won 10 in a row hands against San Jose State going into last night. 10 in a row against the Spartans. San Jose jumps out to a 14-0 lead right out of the gate. And you're thinking, okay, here we go. Because Utah State in the second quarter ties it up, 14-all. And you're thinking, okay, this is another Utah State game. They'll start to pull away in the third and fourth quarter. But no, it's San Jose State dominating the second half. Winning the game 42-21, and outside of Air Force, I have not seen Utah State get dominated on the line of scrimmage on both the offensive and defensive lines like I saw last night. Just complete and utter domination. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look at the decision to go with McKay Hillstead over Cooper Legault and say, well, that was the wrong decision to make. I don't care if it was Cooper Legault. I don't care if it was Jordan Love. I don't care if it was the if it was prime Joe Montana, as soon as that ball was snapped, there were two dudes in the backfield. And Utah State, from an offensive line standpoint, just was whipped up front, just utterly and completely whipped up front. And on the defensive side, you got a San Jose State team that came in averaging about 130 yards a game on the ground. They ran for 251 yards on the ground. San Jose State was 6 of 7 on third downs in the second half. And a lot of them, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 8. It was as dominating of a performance, especially in the second half, as anything I've seen up front in the trenches. It was just big boy football. It was bully football. And Utah State goes into a bye week, and they got a lot of wounds to heal. And they've been decimated with injuries on that offensive line, and they're plugging dudes in, and the dudes that are in aren't healthy, and they're not, you know, they're having a rough go of it. Defensive line, they've just been overmatched. And Utah State now 3-5, and they've got to win 3 out of 4 to end the season to find a way to get to bowl eligibility. And it's going to be tough to do. It certainly is doable. They don't have the toughest of schedules remaining. But one of those games we looked at that said that wasn't the most toughest of games was San Jose State, and they just got whooped, Hans. It was rough to watch. I know you haven't had a chance to go back and look at this film yet, but it was a rough night to watch for sure.
Was McKay Hillstead the right choice in your opinion?
I do think so, because I'll just say I'm privy to a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and Utah State just feels comfortable with what McKay Hillstead can do in the future for this Utah State team, but also right now in making good decisions out on the field. And I Cooper Lega's in the game, Jordan Love's in the game. It doesn't matter. With the protection issues they had last night, it just doesn't matter. And McKay Hillstead's every bit the runner that Cooper Lega is. I don't think Cooper Lega keeps you considering what was going on last night. I don't think Cooper Lega wins that game either. And now Hillstead, there was a early interception he threw that was a bad interception. A second interception that either he read it wrong or the wide receiver read it wrong. I talked to Blake Anderson afterwards, and he said, I don't know yet. I got to go look at the film to see on that second interception who's to blame on that one. It could be either one. There was some miscommunication, and it looked rusty. Dude came off a concussion and hadn't played in 3 games. And so, yeah, he didn't look great at times, but I do think if you're going to be bowl eligible this year, McKay Hillstead gives you the best chance to get there over Cooper Lega. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. I know people are salty. I know people in Logan are upset with Blake Anderson for making the move because Cooper Lega played really well over the last couple of weeks. But I don't think Cooper Lega in this game makes an ounce of difference when you're getting beat in the trenches like he did last night.
Once again, Utah State gets behind. They go down 14-0, and they tie it up before halftime. But we talked about it. Like, if you keep getting behind, eventually it's going to bite you in the butt.
Yep.
And it did. They couldn't get anything going in the second half.
Yeah. It was rough to watch, and they need that bye week. Unfortunately, it's coming up for them because they got to get that offensive line healthy. And they've never, outside of the early part of the season, they just have not been healthy at all this year. And they've been able to duct tape and bailing twine the thing a lot this year. And yet last night it caught up with them. And I think last night was also a night where they just couldn't get after the quarterback. They couldn't stop the run. And for the first time outside of that Air Force game, you really felt like, oh boy, you know, the loss of, you know, 3 great defensive linemen, the loss of an elite linebacker, the loss of a couple guys in the back end, the transfer portal issues that they faced in the offseason. Last night was the one where you really looked at, like, you know what? You lost your 5 best defensive players, and you lost a 6-1 to injury on the very first play of the season. And that's when it really looked like, yep, depth is an issue. And it really caught up with them in a big way last night.
How good was Chevin Cordero?
Yeah, well, he's good, but he didn't have to be good last night. Like, he only threw for 119 yards. And I know he threw for 3 touchdowns, but they were, you know, within the 5-yard line, you know, because they were running the ball so well, they ran a couple play actions where all he had to do was just dump it down to a guy coming out of the backfield for easy scores. Like, Cordero's a great player, but Cordero didn't need to be great last night. because he had the easiest job on the planet. It was just handoff, handoff, handoff. Now, he had two big scrambles. He converted 2 3rd and 11s with his feet because he's just an elite runner. But overall, as a passer, as a quarterback, he really didn't need to do much last night. It was pretty easy. It was, hey, dive, dive, handoff, sweep. Oh, I'll keep a play alive and get 12 yards when I need 11. So his job was made pretty easy by the fact they were able to run the ball so well. Tough night. Tough night for sure. Utah State has got some work to do to try to get right. All right, gentlemen, let's wrap it up. Really fun podcast. We'll kick off the show tomorrow. Any final thoughts before we get this thing, put this thing in the driveway?
Man.
It was a fun week getting ready for this Utah-Oregon game. I'll say that.
Yeah.
If they made BYU Texas, this is two like great matchups.
As we record this,
and I'm just saying big games.
As we record this early Sunday morning, have you seen anything on game day? Because I got to imagine there's a chance, isn't there?
Got to be Utah, Oregon at Rice-Eccles Stadium. I tell you, Utah fans, you got an opportunity in front of you that's unlike anything you've got. I mean, if Utah finds a way to beat Oregon, then it all comes down to that November 11th matchup at Washington. You got to make it as miserable as you can against Oregon. And guys, we've seen Utah fans change things in Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Yeah.
They make it miserable. And I think that they, well, I'll diagnose Oregon. I just know that it's going to be a tough team. I did predict the USC win. There were a few reasons that I felt that way, but Oregon's got a much better defense. We'll take a look at it this week and really get into it. But yeah. Utah fans, get it going, man. This is a big one, Lloyd.
Yeah, it's this one. And I was just looking to see if there had been anything announced on game day. So, and I have not seen anything yet, but it would be a big matchup to have this. And by the way, Washington, they almost lost to Arizona State.
Yeah. Yep.
Like they looked extremely beatable.
Well, it took a pick six for Washington to get to the end zone to distance or to separate a little bit.
I mean, the Pac-12 almost Pac-12 themselves last night.
I'm just bummed out. We're not going to see any more USC Utah games because, you know, USC, the chances of Utah and USC being in the conference title games next to nil. So you're not going to see that. And USC is just, I mean, they're just so much fun to hate on. They're just so much fun to just hate on and so much fun to beat. Kyle Whittingham's won 4 in a row, 3-0 versus Caleb Williams. I'm just bummed out that you're not going to see more matchups between these two schools because you really have a fun rivalry building between these two schools. And unfortunately, money talks, and now you won't see him play again. And I doubt you'll ever see any non-conference matchups as long as Lincoln Riley's around. There's no way he's scheduling Utah on a non-conference game. So sadly, this series is done, but man, it's been fun.
Oh,
the University of Spoiled Children just getting slapped around a little bit. So good.
Aunt Becky's so upset, man. Just sitting in a jail cell like, damn it.
Aunt Becky. All right. Hands and Scotty, Lloyd Cole. Guys, have yourself a great Sunday. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll kick off the show coming up tomorrow. High noon. Let's do it. Let's get it done. We got a lot of college football to talk about. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll wrap up everything coming up tomorrow on the show, noon to 3. Hands and Scotty, Lloyd Cole. This is your Morning After Podcast, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After Podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bag. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.